Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. A busy week this week, extra live programming. And in the next couple of weeks at least, we also have added extra live programming. It's important with everything going on. Today, we're addressing one of my core topics, political prisoners. And we're also trying to make contact with a young man I got through to very briefly this morning, a young Gazan blogger sitting in a war zone in Gaza. I did not reach him easily, and I don't know if we can reach him during the program. If we can, we'll get him on for a short segment. But my guest is Zeynab Mousavi, and Zeynab is the daughter of political prisoner Syed Mousavi. He's a Muslim American of Iranian descent. And why was he convicted? He's sitting in a U.S. federal prison right now. He was convicted for his activism, his outreach, his charitable work in Southern California's Muslim community. Zeynab is currently a doctoral candidate in electrical engineering at UCLA, and she also holds degrees from Caltech, California Institute of Technology, and the University of Michigan. And we want to talk about her father's case. Zeynab, can I just set the table for you?
Sure. Hi. Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, excuse me. Let me just give a brief background about your father. And then 4 minutes after the hour, we have our first of four breaks. But your father, he's been a tireless servant in the Southern California Muslim community, and he helped found the Islamic Shura Council of Southern California. Its aim is to promote communications, understanding, cooperation among the Muslim communities in the region. In 2000, he founded the Hejrat Foundation, a Southern California religious, educational, and charitable organization. And these are some of the things that these organizations do. They promote a broad range of programs in areas of religion, cultural activities, humanitarian, legal, national, international issues of importance, a lot of community outreach, absolutely nothing to do with promoting violence, terrorism. So why on earth are these people targeted? Well, Syed Mousavi is not the only one, and this has been a frequent topic on this program. We've talked about Sami Alarian, Rafael Dafia, my friend Yasin Aref, Fahad Hashmi, Afia Siddiqui just recently, the Fort Dix Five I just wrote about, two Yemeni sheikhs I wrote about, and the glorious human rights lawyer, Lynn Stewart, the one American, the one non-Muslim American in the group, and she was targeted because a former Attorney General, Zeynab Ramsey Clark, asked her to defend an Arab sheikh, Sheikh Abdul Rahman, because Ramsey Clark believes that anyone who goes to court deserves to be represented well. And because Lynn Stewart represented him, she was targeted. She was convicted. It's on appeal. She's free. She's awaiting a verdict that could come out very likely early in the year. It could come out any time now. Zeynab, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for
I am so delighted to have you on. And we've talked about this for a good amount of time. And you wanted to do it, but you wanted to do it when you felt it was the right timing and so on, and you would do nothing to harm your father's situation. That soft music means a break is coming up. Let's take that break, and then I'll let you get into discussing your father's case. Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Zeynab Mousavi, the daughter of political prisoner Syed Mousavi. Zeynab, let me just mention one thing quickly. My co-host, Michelle Chosudovsky, is holding a free lecture for people in the Montreal, Canada area. And it's a pretty vital topic, I would say. His topic is the global financial crisis, the Great Depression of the 21st century. Excuse me. He doesn't say, but I believe the talk will probably be recorded, and if so, it will be posted on Global Research sometime next week. Look for it. It's a vital topic. Michelle knows it absolutely cold. And, of course, we all are concerned with things like this. CNAB, again, let me welcome you and talk about your father and his case and what he's been through and so on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, Zeynep, an honor for me to get you on.
Thank you. Well, we found out that we were under surveillance when our house was raided 2 years ago in June of 2006. And by finding out, I mean after then we found out why we would see a lot of police cars on our street, why we would see a lot of black vans coming in and out around our house, and also why we were always interviewed going in and out of the country for longer times than usually takes with other citizens of the states. And during the raid, my younger brother, who was 16 at the time, was handcuffed, and my father was handcuffed, and our house, lots of boxes and documents were taken out, and my family was held at gunpoint. And about 1 year after the raid, on August 2007, my father was arrested, and he was held in a federal prison in Los Angeles. We tried to get him on bail, like bond, to so that he could prepare for his trial, but unfortunately, his bail was rejected multiple times, so he had to sit in jail. And from then on, we had many problems with the prison system and just helping my dad prepare for the trial. Should I continue?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, Zeynep.
So, for example, with the prison, my father was never allowed to call any of his attorneys from the first day that he was sent to the prison, and that really made things a lot difficult. And after a couple months, he wasn't allowed to call us, the family members, either. So we had to go visit him once or twice a week and just try to get as much information as we could in our social visits. But he was put in solitary confinement, I believe twice or three times, and each time there was, of course, he wasn't ever involved with any violent acts in the prison, but we were never given an explanation as to why he was put in solitary confinement for more than 30 days at a time. And there was just the medical treatment. Yep.
Zeynep, I would say to you, why was he put in solitary confinement for 10 seconds? I mean, it was done, of course, to punish him for no reason at all, but, I mean, they do these things. It really is grotesque what they do, but they put him there and they kept him there, and I just wanted to get that in. This thing, an abuse to any human being, Zeynep, is an abuse to all of us. We're all together. We're all brothers and sisters, and it grieves me greatly that a country calling itself a democracy would treat any human being this way, even someone who actually committed a crime. You don't treat them with brutality, but to go after innocent people and to literally treat them so savagely, it's far more than just a disgrace. It's almost embarrassing, but this is what we do. I'm sorry, you continue.
Oh, no, thank you. And well, the biggest issue was that from the beginning of the case, the government used the T word, terrorism, throughout the pre-trial and they set the case so that it appears that my father has connections with terrorist organizations. And even though the government's been on our case for a couple years and I'm sure spent lots of money trying to find out, trying to somehow find some connection of my father with any terrorist organization, but they couldn't at the end. He was not charged with, he wasn't convicted with anything at all related with terrorism, except from the beginning, the government kept telling the judge that my father has connections with terrorist organization, and they even used the secret evidence against my father, so we don't know what's that secret evidence, so-called evidence, and our attorneys don't know. It was just something used to hold my dad in prison until his trial. And during the trial, the government again portrayed my father as someone who has connections, high connections with Iran. They mistranslated many key documents. They took my father's regular driver's license of Iran, which any citizen of Iran has, and mistranslated. They made that. They used that to show that my father was part of Iran's military, which never true. And also, it was just a regular driver's license that they used, and there were other key documents and key dates on the documents that were translated by mistakenly translated, and even though throughout the trial the government's own witness pointed out these errors and said that they were mistakes in the translations, but I believe the prosecution team did a really good job in convincing the jury that my father has some sort of connection, even though their own witness ended up admitting that the documents were mistranslated, that none of the documents show my father has relations with government officials in Iran or with any terrorist organizations, but unfortunately, the jury found him guilty on the charges.
Yeah, let me explain that your father is an Iranian American or an American Iranian, not sure which order, and he was accused of being associated with the Iranian military, accused of breaking the Iranian embargo. Accused of outrageous stuff. He planned a journey to the Hajj, and he met with, I don't have the name of the company in front of me, but he did nothing to break any law, but they accused him of all of these outlandish things, including income tax violations.
Sure.
For his Hajj. He organized Hajj trips for people who wanted to go and fulfill a duty that they should if they're able to. Most people don't have the means to take an expensive trip like that. Well, he arranged this, and he didn't make any money. He lost money on this, and they accused him of income tax violations, these kinds of things. Go ahead,
yes.
You continue.
Yes, there were, yes, all they could charge him with were technicalities, and of course we're appealing the charges. But with the Hajj was something really dear to my father's heart, and where he would offer a lot of discount to people, especially students, and he made arrangements for those who couldn't afford to pay to make installments. So it was not for making profit. It was not a business in its regular meaning of the term business. it was just part of the nonprofit organization that he founded, and he found Hajj to be a very spiritual experience, and he just wanted everyone to share it with everyone and anyone who was interested to go. So he would always make financial arrangement for people who couldn't afford it. And yes, at the end, we would lose money on each year of the Hajj. As I said, it wasn't, his purpose was never making profit out of this, these trips, because they're religious trips. But, yes, the government charged him with violation on tax, and we're appealing that. Is that the music?
Do you hear that? Do you hear that soft music going on? That means we have another break. Let's take the break, and we'll be right back.
Sure. Thank you.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
In Terre Haute, Indiana. And I guess he just got the Zenab just a couple of days ago. And I was awfully encouraged. Yassin Aref, who I consider my friend now, his lawyers were on my program. He's able to send emails. He and I exchange emails on a regular basis. In the last week, we've exchanged two emails, and I alerted him about your father to watch for him. And yesterday, he sent me an email that he arrived, and he looked well. And that's encouraging. I guess they didn't rush to get him to Terre Haute. They probably made the journey as uncomfortable as possible. A fairly long transit time. But this is really grievous. See, now what's going on with your father, you could almost look at it as a microcosm for what's going on in Iraq and Afghanistan and the absolute house of horrors in Gaza right now. That I've got my fourth article on it written, and that'll go out on Monday. And the one encouraging thing about that, we're following it, of course, can't miss it. The outrage worldwide is so immense, and it's sustained, it just keeps going, that hard as Israel is trying to justify what they're doing, there's no possibility they can do that. But let's get back to your father.
Yeah, just with the prison and his transfer, he was sent to the Oklahoma Transfer Center, and he was put in solitary confinement there as well. We received only two letters from my father during the time that he was there. In his first letter, he talked about how he was traveling with 200 other inmates, and once they arrived to Oklahoma, only him and another Muslim prisoner were separated. And they had to go through extra searches, and they were sent to solitary confinement. When my father asked about these course of events and why he was put in solitary, the prison officials were not answering his question, but after multiple times of trying and just asking why he was put in solitary when he was in the general population in California, he was told that it's because his case is terrorism related. And even though our lawyers and myself and my father have been trying to let the prison system know that his case is not related to terrorism, and he was never charged with terrorism, never convicted of terrorism, still,
because he's a Muslim, they Muslim terrorism, you know, one equals the other. In Oklahoma City, you're talking about his transit from Southern California to Indiana.
Yes. Yes. He was there for 1 month, and we We've been sitting, we could not have phone communication with him. We've been sending letters. I don't know if he's received any of the letters, but throughout that 1 month, we got two letters from him, and the first letter took about 2 weeks for us to receive, so it was a horrible 2 weeks to just sit and just wait and just not know what's going on or where he's at. But I guess he's doing well now. I don't know what that means.
Have you had any contact with him in Terre Haute?
No, unfortunately not.
I'm hopeful that he will be able to communicate by email. I can tell you that I've also gotten handwritten letters from Yassine Aref. It's a lot easier to send an email, and he can make them as lengthy as he wants. Yassine is a poet, and he sends me poetry along with his comments about things. I'm not able to get him any materials. I tried to mail him a book. Weeks later, it was returned to me. I attached a couple of articles that I wrote. He never got them. Well, that's no surprise. The kind of material I write, they don't want people in a prison to have that. That's for sure. But I tried anyway. I would ask you this: if you're able to establish email communication with him, would you let me know and get me his email address so I can exchange emails with him as well?
Of course, that would be wonderful.
I would love to do that. Would love to do it.
He's heard about you, and I'm sure he would love to come.
Well, it's important that he knows that people care about him. People who never knew who he was until this happened. People who may not be of the same faith. But I like to say, one of my taglines when I talk about political prisoners, in the case of your father, my last line was, we're all Syed Mousavis. And I would say the same about my Palestinian brothers and sisters. I'm Jewish. I say very proudly, I am a Palestinian. As long as they suffer, I suffer with them. And I feel the same about your father and all the others that have been unjustly persecuted. It's the bottom of the hour. We have another break. Let's take it and come right back. I guess we still haven't been able to contact this young man in Gaza. Not easy to do. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Zeynab Mousavi. We're talking about her father, Syed. Zeynab, let me let you continue the story. It's so heart-rendering to hear these things. And none of this makes much news. Your father's case, I guess I was the first one to write anything in detail about your father. I mean, that really shocked me, because your father wasn't exactly a ghost in Southern California. Maybe not a famous man, but he was involved in some notable activities, and you would think that at least the Los Angeles Times would have written something about him, not honest writing, but they would have covered it. But there was virtually nothing written about him, so it's almost like all of these abuses go on, and the vast majority of people in this country have no idea about this. Even worse, when there are high-profile cases, and I just wrote about another one, the so-called Fort Dix Five, five young Muslim men who were accused of wanting to secure weapons to attack Fort Dix. If you can imagine the ludicrousness of such an accusation. But they were charged with that. They were convicted with that. Five young men would declare war on the U.S. Army. Now, would anyone think of it in those terms? I mean, to invade Fort Dix and essentially go to war with the U.S. Army. and they were unjustly convicted. I wrote about it in detail. That got some coverage. Did you hear about them, Zineb?
Yes, through your website. Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
I made contact with someone who knows one of the family members, and I asked him whether that person would like to come on this program. He didn't know. He was going to look into it. I haven't heard anything back yet, but I don't know if it's a wife or a mother, father, brother. I don't know who it is, but if they want to come on, I absolutely will schedule a program and get them on to talk about these young men. Again, more outrage. And one I didn't mention when I listed the names at the top of the program, I wrote an article about the Holy Land Foundation charity, the most important Muslim charity in the country. They raised millions of dollars to do such outrageous work, Zineb, is provide educational services, food, essential to life things that people need in the Middle East, in the occupied Palestinian territories, for people who really need these things very badly. And they were accused of outlandish charges, again, terrorism and all the rest of it. And the principals of that organization were convicted. They almost saw the conviction as a badge of honor that they were doing such important work that this government and the Bush administration wanted to shut them down for providing charitable outreach, which is essentially the same thing as your father.
Yeah, sometimes I just get speechless with everything that's going on. I'm thinking whether the trend of the government going after Muslim leaders and activists is changing, and in the sense that even though my father, inside the courtroom, they claimed that my father was had relations with terrorist organizations, but on the outside, he was the government never made such comments. And I'm thinking whether now I'm thinking maybe after 9/11. At first, it was the best thing for the easier way for them to go out and call people terrorists. And
indeed. So this is an age old strategy. It probably goes back to antiquity, Zineb. In order for a government to get the population to go along with what they want to do, outlandish as it may be, they need enemies. And they need, after 9/11, George Bush declared a war on terrorism. Well, you know, I mean, words doesn't mean that there really are all these bad guys out there we have to go after. But you have to scare the public. And Muslims were the designated people to be called terrorists. Muslims have been persecuted in this country for many, many years, Zineb. It's not a new story. It's an old story. But it really became very intense after 9/11. So, ugly terms like Islamo-fascist. Hate language. This is really hate language. And it showed up in the media. It shows up in academia. People talk about a clash of civilizations. The great Palestinian-American Edward Said, who died 5 years ago, he talked about the vilification of people in the East and the difference between us, people in the West, America, Europe, and the other. This lower form of life, these people who live in the Middle East. It's incredible, and people don't understand, and they're not taught properly in school here, and it's very easy to look down at people in another part of the world who have different customs and practice a different religion, speak a different language, and to think of them as some kind of subhuman. propaganda sells this, but it's an old strategy to scare the public, and the idea back in 2001 was to convince the public we should go to war with Afghanistan and Iraq, and then we need to convince them that there are terrorists in our midst right here. So they trump up charges against people like your father and many others. Some become very high-profile cases, and people actually believe that these are bad people. You know, how do they know?
True.
And this goes on and on.
Yeah,
you pick it up.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate what the government is doing, because going after Muslim leaders, because from my understanding of all the other mosques and organizations, and well, my really good understanding of the mosque that my father established is that they the programs that they offer helps Muslim Americans to integrate better within the American society, especially the new immigrants that are coming into America, and it also provides a space for non-Muslims to learn about Islam. Our mosque, the Al Nabi Mosque, has had many college students visit and just learn about Islam and realize that the mosque and Muslims are just same as any other American, and kind of just establish that relation and build bridges across religions. And it's just sad that the government is trying to stop these programs by going after the Muslim leaders. And, well, I mean, the programs haven't stopped, but it's going after the leaders. It's just
picking people of some prominence for some of the activities they do that are really glorious. We should give these people like your father awards, Zeynep, not persecute them. They should get awards for what they do. They don't have to do these things. Your father didn't have to do these things. He did it because he's a good man. He's a good man. There aren't many. There aren't many like your father. There aren't many like Sami Alarian, like the Holy Land Foundation Charity, many others. Or just people who are innocently targeted, and it never should happen, but it does happen, and it's really outrageous. People don't realize that our prisons are filled with a good number of political prisoners, and this goes back decades. And our prisons in this country, Zeynep, not, aside from the ones outside of the country that I call torture prisons, like Guantanamo is only one of many. But the prisons in this country, 2 years ago I wrote an article called The U.S. Gulag Prison System, where they'll put people in terrible confinement. I don't think the CMU in Terre Haute is this way. The CMU is to segregate Muslims from the rest of the prison population. But these supermax prisons that we have in so many states around the country, I've written about them. These are houses of horrors. People actually go crazy because of the way they're treated in these places. And they're supposedly, in the words of the prison system, they're for the worst of the worst. Well, a lot of them aren't the worst of the worst. They're simply called that, and they're thrown into these hell holes. And you stay in one of those long enough, and you won't recover. And I wrote a couple of times about what it's like to be, I mean, in total isolation in perpetuity. Not for 30 days, but that's your life. They lock you up in isolation. And I described it twice, Zeynep, in an article, which your father went through for 30 days at a time or whatever. That let's us imagine that we locked ourselves in our bathroom for 24 hours with enough food and water to get by. I mean, that would be a terrible ordeal for 24 hours. Now just imagine spending the rest of our lives there. That's what it's like for people who are confined forever. I don't know what they do with them once they literally go out of their minds. But we actually treat some people this way for no good reason. Your father will not, this will not happen to your father. He'll be at the CMU, and he'll be there with, what, 300 or so other Muslim prisoners. Is that the count?
I think so. I think that's the latest.
It will not be like a stay at the Ritz, that's for sure. But, they won't flog him. They won't treat him the way he was treated before he got there. And as you explained, he never broke any rules. He never did anything wrong. He never violated any prison rules. And they still treated him so harshly.
True.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's, I cannot imagine what it's like to be in the Supermax prison, but, this experience has been already traumatic, and just thinking that the family members, we just have two visits per month, and each can last only for 2 hours, and that we would have to talk to my father from behind a glass, I've heard, and I've heard that we have to speak in English, and once we talk in another language, the meeting, the social visit is over. It's just, I've been thinking about it since my father was imprisoned, and I learned about CMU, but it's just, I still don't know how to deal with that, so I cannot even imagine how it is to be sent to the Supermax prisons.
And Zeynep, you know, your father and you, I think you're two examples of very normal human beings. You know, if your name were a Jennifer Smith and your father's name were a Jim Jones or something, I mean, look at you. Well, we've talked about what your father was involved in, and look at you. You have two degrees. You're studying for a PhD. I mean, this is terrific stuff. I mean, I'm so impressed with this. Whatever your field might be, I don't know anything about electrical engineering, but, I mean, it could be, you know, it could be in English literature or whatever, but I put you in the category of a scholar, and it's just wonderful. You're not working in a garage making bombs. You're trying to establish credentials to have whatever you want to do with this, teach or work using the skills that you get from your degree. I mean, this is wonderful. We should applaud the people like you and your father for doing things like this.
True, yeah. Well, my father was always encouraging not only his children, not only us, for pursuing higher degrees in education, but it was another thing that was really dear to his heart, to encourage the youth of our community to pursue higher degrees. And he always liked to mentor youth. There were a couple young people at our community who were involved with gangs and drugs, and they actually, through these programs, they changed dramatically, and they hold degrees, and they're living decent lives. It's just unfortunate. It's not only the family who's suffering. I think in the bigger picture, it's the community and the society that's suffering from taking away leadership like my father.
And everybody in the community really has to just sit back. And I'm sure community members, when they get together, say things like, why are they doing these things to us? We're just normal human beings. We just want to live a normal life just like everybody else in the area. We want to be friends. We don't want to commit hostile acts against anybody. Why are they doing these things to us? And if we could take some of these prosecutors and invite them over to your house or another member of the Muslim community's house and sit down and have a dinner or get together on a Sunday afternoon, These guys would see that you're very normal. There's nothing out of the ordinary about you. That you're just like their neighbors in their neighborhood back home. But of course they have a job and they do what they do. And in some cases they pick them because, it's very easy to get them to do the nasty things they do. I don't know why anyone with a law degree would take a job where your job is literally to railroad innocent people into hard times in prison. What kind of a career is that? And yet that's what these people do, the prosecutors.
Yeah.
Oh, we have another break coming up. I guess we have not had much luck getting hold of our Gazan blogger, which is not easy. I'll probably try on another program seeing that, but I just hope he's okay. Because literally there were explosions going off when I spoke to him briefly this morning. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the News Hour. CNAB, let me give you the second best thing to getting our blogger live on air. I'm in contact with Professor Saeed Abdulwahed. He teaches at Al-Azhar University of Gaza. I just got this email in the last 20 seconds. Let me read it to you.
Sure.
It's getting tougher with more air raids on everywhere. Many aircraft are in the sky, and bombing can be heard everywhere. Again, he's in Gaza now. Media reporters have been injured while covering from tops of high buildings minutes ago. More than 20 missiles in 2 hours in Gaza City alone. The number of dead from the UN school that we heard about, CNAP, that was bombed, the media reported 30, 35, whatever numbers. He says the number of dead from the UNRWA school bombing has reached 67 so far, plus the injured, all civilians, men, women, children. No place is safe, no electricity or water. Still, I operate a generator to send off my messages to you. I'm getting regular emails from him. They all read something like this. Can I mention one other thing about Gaza? I just put it in my new article for Monday. The Israeli military, the IDF, Israeli Defense Forces, herded 100 civilian men, women, and children into a residential building and told them they took them from their homes and they herded them into this building. This was just in the past few days. And told them, don't come out. Don't come out on the street. And then tanks opened fire on the building, shelled the building, knowing there were civilian men, women, and children inside. They killed 30 or more. Some got out. They walked 2 miles to a spot where civilian cars were able to take them to a hospital. I don't know how many. I don't know how many did that. And if 30 or more were reported dead, the final death total might turn out to be double that amount. You talk about a horror story. It's like putting people inside of a building and lighting a match, setting it on fire, killing them. This is murder to an even greater degree than bombing civilian neighborhoods. So it's really the same thing. But the Israeli military put these people there, knew exactly where they were, and then tanks shelled the building. What can I say? Oh, so you have a couple of minutes left. Some final comments.
Well, I'm speechless about what you just shared with us. But with regards to my father, I just wanted to say that we have put a website that has more information and talks in detail about what's been going on. The website is freesayedandsavvy.com, which is spelled freesayedandsavvy.com.
Let me repeat that. Free Sayed Musavi, S-E-Y-E-D-M-O-U-S-A-V-I. And if they forget that, they can Google Steve Lindman, Sayed Musavi, they'll find my article, and they'll probably get information there. But you send out updates, so concerned people like me and many others know what's happening with your father as you find it out.
Yes, there's list, the news list that they can subscribe to, and they send out updates.
I repeat, CNAB, we're all Syed Mesavis. This is what went on in Nazi Germany. You know, first they came for the trade unionists, and then the communists, and then the Jews. And every time, this was the famous guy who made this statement, every time people said, well, you know, I'm not one of those, so why should I worry? And then at the end, they came for him. And there was no one left for him to cry out to. This is what we're going through right now. Today, your people, Zineb, tomorrow, the rest of us. This is a terrible situation going on, and it keeps getting worse and worse, and I'm very worried what will happen under the Obama administration. And I refer to him as continuity from George Bush. I don't think he'll make life very tough for your father necessarily, but continuity indeed. George Bush's third term, oh, this hour went by. I hope you and I will stay in touch, Zineb.
Of course, yeah. Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity, and thanks to you and all your listeners.
Zineb, good. God bless you and your mother and your family. And I think of your father all the time and the others like him. I will stay on this story, I assure you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And we'll be back next week with a pretty full week of programming next week live. Tune in beginning on Monday.